Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning, July 28th, 2014. Welcome to the program. It's a delight to have you with us. All you have to do to get involved is email us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we would love to have you aboard for today's program to talk about the myriad of issues that we will discuss on today's program. Let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, hopefully fresh from a lovely birthday weekend.
Yeah, we played at the Blueberry Festival yesterday. We got there, it was raining and lightning, and then all of a sudden we walked in and boom, everything cleared up. And they gave us a lot of credit, which we didn't deserve.
Oh, I was just about to give you the credit, so if you don't think you deserve it, then it's okay.
Thank you, Libby.
You're welcome, Alan.
Do almost anything, Libby.
WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond. How are you, sir?
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. And political consultant extraordinaire Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
All right. Very nice to have you here. Let us go to the subjects of the day as soon as my...
Yeah, I'm not either.
Who's yours?
Right. You're not either?
No, I'm not either.
You mean you're a slave to electronic devices?
They are.
Just go with the flow.
I agree with Raymond. I think if we're going to use them, we shouldn't mention it.
Why?
Well, if they don't work, then it's...
Well, then we have to just do what they did before the cavemen were there. You know, just talk about things.
Fire and smoke signals.
Right, they had teletype in those days.
Yeah.
We had the printer, the old
AP
printer.
And remember the fax machine?
I do.
Remember when we had fax machines?
Yes, I do.
Remember carbon paper?
Yes.
Oh, that smelled great.
No, dittos.
Rexograph. There were things.
Yeah, that's right.
One was called a Rexograph.
It was warm, and it had that smell.
The dittos were not warm because
it
was used
in a machine.
Yeah, but it was acetone that made it all happen, and that was the smell. It was really lovely.
There was Rexograph, and then... There was mimeograph.
Mimeograph too, yep. Yes. Yep. Those were fun.
Raymond?
No, go on.
Okay,
this is great.
Let's talk about the topics for today. Again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Just hours after the Malaysian government reached an agreement with Ukrainian separatists on Sunday over access to the crash site of a Malaysian airliner shot down in rebel territory, the Ukrainian military launched an operation to recapture the debris field, again stalling international efforts to secure the site. Okay, you can come in. We have an agreement. You can't come in. We're going to recapture the field.
Well, they reached the agreement with the separatists.
Right.
But what, you mean not with the Russians, is what you're saying?
Well, no, but the Ukrainian military launched the operation.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But again, you don't have access to the field.
Right.
So what do you do?
Well, it seems to me this is a sort of balancing issue. On the one hand, as they say in the coffee house, you got your Ukrainians. Everything takes a euro, right? You got your Ukrainians. On the other hand, you got your rebels, right?
And then on the third hand... Or on your left foot.
You've got your Russians.
That's right.
Right.
You got the Russians.
And on the fourth hand, you got your...
Malaysians.
No.
The rest of the world, the international community.
Yes, that's right. On the fourth hand, you got your international community. And then on the fifth hand, you got your water.
Water.
Well, this waitress always says, here's your water.
Okay.
You know, your. Everything takes your.
Okay, keep going.
All right. So now it all plays out. Putin is clearly firing some missiles into the whole place. You have your group of people on the outside, your international community, sort of split because they need the gas, they're afraid of Putin, they know Putin has no outside limitations, otherwise known in the psychological field as superego, and is sort of a difficult guy to deal with. On the other hand, you have the United States, which wants to rein in Putin, and is doing what they can. So, in order to understand what's happening, you have to assign values to each of these players. It's sort of like a game.
Mm-hmm.
We used to play Battleship, you know, so that each of these has a value, and then everybody's trying to fake each other out. Putin gets away with it because he's a big liar. I mean, he says, no, no, I want to get along. And then he's firing stuff in and denying it. I've seen politicians here at home do the same thing. They establish a narrative, which is just not true. And then they just keep on saying the right things and doing the other thing.
Because if you say it long enough, people will believe it, and that people don't track on what you do, unless the media does.
Unless the media does. And sometimes the media actually does its job, and it's been doing its job fairly nicely lately.
Right, lately.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but the losing people here, the people who really are
at risk.
At the end of their wits and losing out are the families.
Yeah.
Of all the people that have been killed, because they don't have, not all the bodies have been reclaimed. They don't have an answer. This isn't like the Malaysian jet that went down and nobody has an answer because nobody can find anything. They know where this is.
And they know pretty
have
much who
access,
did it.
Right?
And they pretty much
know right. And they
did.
Know who did it, and yet there's still no resolution for these families. And they're the ultimate losers in all of this.
So when you say resolution for the families, let's be careful here, Alan. What is the possible resolution that they're not going to be dead anymore? They are dead.
I know, getting the bodies back, being able to have closure. From a psychological point of view, being able to have closure, knowing, yes, there is somebody who's taking responsibility. We know who's responsible, but really having somebody take responsibility for this. But more, it's about the emotional closure of being able to say goodbye to your loved ones in a way that is meaningful for the individual families and not on the world stage. And there, and some bodies went back to the Netherlands, but there are still many more that aren't. It's like, you know, the family, the mom whose son got shot down over Vietnam and they never found the body. And now 50 years later, the body is being returned and she feels like she has some kind of closure.
So what's the good of, you know, all of this? In other words, is it you get closure politically? Does it help anything?
No, this isn't about closure politically. This is about closure for the individual families who have lost people. Politically, this is going to keep going on and on and on. Nobody's going to take responsibility. Everyone's going to blame everybody else. And Putin's going to keep on lying.
Respectfully, I think this is more about who is going to ultimately be proven the guilty party here. They're both spinning this. So the separatists say the attempts by Ukrainian military to retake this show clearly that Kiev is trying to cover up and control the evidence. Meanwhile, the separatists look very guilty, and they've been imposing roadblocks and, according to Kiev, destroying and tampering with evidence. Somebody is lying.
But are the separatists the issue, or are the in other words, are the separatists a finger, or are the separatists a finger on the hand of the Russians?
Well, Russian involvement would only be if the separatists did that, then you can go that route and find out how much the Russians were controlling it, which I suspect was quite a lot. But somebody screwed up, and they don't want it be known.
In that part of the world, when somebody screws up, you go to the gulag. I mean, no, and no one ever wants to say
I'm sorry,
publicly.
I'm missing something here. What do you mean screwed up?
In other words, somebody shot down that airliner thinking it was something else.
Maybe.
I think so.
I mean, do we know that?
Maybe. No,
yeah,
okay.
I'm not so sure
if you're
about
a separatist
that.
Or you're a Russian government or you're the government in Kiev. Not a really good plan to shoot down a passenger liner, even though it was a terrible decision to fly the passenger liner over that war zone anyway.
Yeah, but hundreds of planes were being flown over that area anyway because it's a flight pattern, and it was 30,000 feet in the air, and you know, you need to have a really powerful missile with people who know what they're doing to be able to make it work.
All right, let me ask you this then, panel.
I.e. the Russians.
If you are the Russians, what would be gained by shooting down an airline?
I'm really glad you asked, because here's what I think. I think there's a possibility that the Russians are always looking at this stage of the game to provoke and to warn. Stay out of here. Don't mess with us. And if you do, we'll take action and we'll get you. That's what I think.
Hmm. Are you buying that, Ray?
Maybe. I mean, who knows how nutty Vlad is. So Alan might be right.
He's nuts. Let's put it that way, okay?
History, he's power hungry. If he loses his stature, if his country gets into something that is really dangerous, he'll be looked on as a nut. Hitler is looked on as a nut and was a nut. That's clear. You know, history is written by the winners. And if Putin is playing his agenda, we've said it before, we say it again, his agenda is clearly a nationalistic one and to play to his people. And there was just a story in the paper that he's immensely popular.
You know, he's nuts in my category of nuts, you know, that he's megalomaniac. And so maybe not the psychological like Hitler was, but
General Douglas MacArthur was a megalomaniac. Yeah. Trust me on this.
Yeah.
Every book that has been written about MacArthur says
the same thing.
Almost every book wonders.
Well, to the victor go the spoils. He'll be able to write history in Russia, but he won't be able to write the history of all of this outside of Russia. That's for sure.
All right.
That's one of those screeching.
And on that note, we'll take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Who would know better? I think Ray was happy.
Nimble.
Whoever's playing this guitar is very good. He did a Steely Dan cover in the first bumper. That was the Beatles' Revolution, I think. Come Together. That's good. Whoever that is, it's good.
Good stuff.
Hopper,
who is
better
it?
Tell me.
We're going to find out.
Okay.
Okay, I can't hear you.
In the meantime.
Wow.
Andreas Varley. There you go. In the meantime, yes, sir?
That's the name of the next tune.
In the meantime.
Who wrote Swanee River?
Al Jolson.
Ed Norton. That's the answer.
Do you have any letters, Alan?
I don't know. It says, here. It's from John. We're loading up here, and we'll tell you. Am I the only one who, whenever someone says pro-Russian separatist here, professional Russian separatist? No, John, I think the distinction eludes me. I think you have a point. Okay, so that's all I got. You?
Okay. I think that is what I have as well. Let's go to one more story before we take a break, and we'll go to Syria and touch on that story for just a moment. New U.S. help arrives for Syrian rebels as government and extremists gain some ground. A U.S.-backed effort to arm the moderate Syrian opposition is finally ramping up along the Turkey-Syria border, but it may come too late to save the rebels from defeats on two fronts. By President Bashar al-Assad's government and by the extremists seeking to carve out an Islamic state.
Now, could you all at least help me do something? Because I hate to crow, but didn't I tell you all, I think Libby joined me in this, that we should be very careful about arming the so-called rebels, as we did with people like, you know, well, you know, some of the worst people in the world who came to bomb us later on, and they were part of the people we were helping. Be careful of who you get in bed with. The so-called original rebels are now making accommodations with the new caliphate and so-called caliphate. And so why in the world do we think they're better than Assad? That's my question.
Well, not only that, it just seemed like there was a bureaucratic process going on. They have to toe the certain line that all these countries agree to. And what I don't think we should get involved, but it just seemed this strange process of, you have to fill out these forms and check off all the right boxes. Meanwhile, you know, Assad and the radical Islamists are going in and taking over whatever it is that the rebels, the stronghold that they had at Aleppo, I think.
Are we sure? I'm probably going to get into terrible trouble.
I'm probably not.
But are we absolutely sure that we're better off with the so-called rebels than with, you know, Assad?
Assad kills his people. I mean,
genocide.
These
other guys are cutting people's heads off.
Well, these rebels were...
Which is usually fatal as well.
Yes, right.
It's not good.
These rebels were supposedly more moderate than the radical, the ISIS folks, the radical Islamists.
But the rebels are giving in. We had a spate of stories this weekend.
Well, they're leaving, and they're...
They're saying, okay, take it over.
We're done, right, because they don't have the resources they need.
Well...
It's not that it's our...
Well, fault, the other guys have the resources they need. Where are they getting them from?
That's a really good question, because they do have money. They
well,
do
they,
have,
they robbed all the banks when they took over in the first place.
They do have military might, so...
I'm not sure about this.
So, in the minute we have left, where do you think we go from here?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I think if the president and Kerry had a clue, things would be better than they are. But I think that this absolute blind sense that the rebels are always better in each of these cases, because I think the way this all started with the Arab Spring was that, you know, it was that the rebels would win and that we would be on the wrong side because we had supported the wrong side. It turns out that that's not so quite the right thing. And look, we support bad governments all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
The Saudis come to mind very quickly. So they cut people's heads off, too, when they do the wrong thing. So, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, you sort of let it unfold. And if you're going to go fight with them, then you figure out why you're going to fight with them first. And what the possible repercussions are going to be later on.
Well, it was interesting. I was watching something on Bill Maher, Glenn Greenberg from The Guardian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some other folks were on with Maher. And Greenberg was making the case that we willy-nilly fund these wars all over the place and get involved in these things. And we don't know who these people are. And we end
That's
up...
exactly the case I just made.
Right, yeah. And we end up...
Mahar's second place.
Yeah. But Mahar was not in agreement with this. But, you know, it's like we go in and you know, I remember we armed... in Nicaragua, we armed the wrong people. And in El Salvador, and we were in all the South American countries where they... Oh, my God, they might become communists. We armed the worst governments in the world. Just to fight against the boogeyman, you know, which we all know now is just more fluff than anything. But
wasn't then.
But
in the 60s
I think
and
it
70s.
Was. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Oh,
well,
yeah, we.
Yeah, Ray always says that when he gets on when it's some
yeah.
gets a little.
Yeah,
we have 4 seconds.
We'll be back
look,
after
you know,
this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning, July 28th, and we're very happy to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to write us a letter. Libby Post, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok are all here, and Alan has some letters to read to you.
I do. I'll read them right out to you. Let's see here. Andrew says, major fear, ISIS continues to advance and they establish a radical Sunni caliphate next to Shia Iran. We know where that goes, but this time with a Kurdish state of sorts, keen to create Kurdistan out of parts of both countries and Turkey in the north. And that's from Andrew. And then says Jim, an interesting story a few days ago might have been on NPR or Morning News, Putin's family name was Rasputin sometime generations ago. I heard that. Something to think about, Jim. Well, okay. Well,
is
think
it true?
About that. What's the relevance of whether it's true or not?
Can he swim?
Some
people
of that genetic.
It's gone viral. Okay,
that,
and then Ken says, what about the Iranian passenger plane that we shot down in 1988? We paid a settlement 8 years later, but have never apologized or explained it satisfactorily. From what I have read, the government that is our favorite in Kiev are swastika-wearing, Jewish-hating Nazi sympathizers who supported the Nazis in the Second World War. Is this correct or just more propaganda? Well, Ken, I know what you know, and I've certainly heard a great deal about that. But if you go all the way back to the Second World War, then, you know, you might never want to talk to a German again, for example. So, you know, there's a question as to whether or not people have come around. Now, that's all I have to say about that. Who said that? That's all I have to say about that.
Alan Chartok.
No. Okay, and Jay said...
Well, who did say that?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I thought you had an answer.
It was the, one of the movies. Please at least glance at this article. It will help inform our cook. I can't read that because we're not reading articles on the air. And that's what I have so far. Forrest Gump said that.
Okay. There we go.
Forrest Gump said that. And that's all I have to say about that.
Excellent.
Best film ever made. After the Lone Ranger. After the Lone Ranger.
The new Lone Ranger.
The new one or the old one?
There were three. There were actually three. The new one is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
The one before it, which you guys don't remember, which came out in about 1971. We saw it at the Copake Movie Theater before it burned down. I hope not for that reason. It was so bad.
That was horrible.
It was a real stinker.
But because it didn't have Clayton Moore in it.
That's right.
They replaced Clayton Moore.
Yeah, that was dumb. That was just dumb.
Well, it was 1971.
I don't think it was. I think it was 81, actually.
81?
I think so.
Clayton Moore would have been a bit long of the tooth for that in 1981.
Well, I think that was part of the problem.
Yeah.
What does that mean, long of the tooth?
Oh.
Rodents, no, I know what it means.
Rodents continue to grow their teeth.
Yes.
Unless they chew.
You're making this up, aren't you?
I believe it's true.
Oh, really?
I believe they have to chew in order to stunt the growth of their teeth. Wow. 18 minutes to go.
Okay, next.
All right, next we go. Now I'm trying to find out the...
This is like a 2-mile-an-hour freight train. It's just not picking up any steam today.
Yeah, it was 1981, The Legend of the Lone Ranger.
Okay.
And, they filed a lawsuit to prevent Clayton Moore from
wearing the mask.
And they then gave a cameo to his TV replacement, John Hart, was not very nice. But it starred, and this name I did remember, Clinton Spilsbury. Do you remember Clinton Spilsbury?
Yeah. No, I do not.
Yeah. No.
He worked heavily in Flower.
Oh, did he? Oh, was his cousin the Doughboy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, 16 minutes to go if we're scoring at home.
Okay.
Do that again, Joe.
Okay. Here is the story that we're working on at this moment as labor gatherings go. This one was highly unusual. 68 workers arrived on charter buses from St. Louis, 100 from New York City, and 180 from Alabama, Georgia, and the Carolinas. 50 flew in from Los Angeles and 24 from Seattle. This was a major rally in Addison, Illinois, that took place for fast food workers, 1,200 of them from McDonald's, Burger King, and other chains, eager to pursue their ambitious goal of creating a $15 an hour wage floor for the nation's 4 million fast food workers. Crowding the weekend into an expo center in the suburb west of Chicago, many wore boldly lettered T-shirts proclaiming, "We are worth more, raise up for $15. So,
what's the union involvement in this?
The union involvement is Service Employees International Union.
Right.
Very 2 million members.
Meeting.
And
very important meeting.
This meeting was largely underwritten by them.
Well, here's the deal.
To the tune of $15 million, I think.
Yes.
Here's the deal, for whatever it's worth. We know that we have the lowest union membership in our modern history now because people don't feel they're getting anything from their unions, whether they are right or wrong. But I've always said that there will come that time when workers are so exploited by their employers that they will find a reason to have unions again. And this seems like just such a time.
Yeah, there's a professor quoted in this. Was this the New York Times? Yeah.
Yeah.
Professor from Rutgers who says basically that this is a watershed moment for unions. Basically, the SEIU is going to use this, if possible, to get out of that low point that the unions have been in. So I think anyone who's...
So the professor of what?
Labor relations.
Yeah, well, so that's from the labor relations school, right? And so
that would be true.
Right. And so we pretty well know what the potential prejudice is there.
Except, first of all, she was a SUNY Albany student. I knew her way back when. And then she went on to do student organizing and other kinds of organizing. She does recognize that the labor movement is in a very deep rut, and that's something that...
Well, everybody recognizes. Well, you'd have to be stupid not to say
sure,
that.
Sure, but you don't. But you aren't hearing the labor union saying it.
Well, so, well, you know, I mean, what do you
right.
expect?
So,
but I think most analysts know this, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think just because she's a labor relations professor...
She should be dismissed.
She should be dismissed.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that... If the unions are going to have any kind of resurgence, they do have to build their membership. And this is one place where if they can unionize these workers, like the hotel workers have unionized
sure.
the hotel folks. If they
the
can,
doormen.
Right.
They you can, know what
right.
doormen in Manhattan make?
Right. 40
no.
an hour.
Over $40,000 a year.
So if you can, if they can, if the unions can come in, if SEIU can come in and somehow get the mechanism in to, and this administration would probably be the most positive towards that, to be able to unionize these people, I think it would be great. You cannot live on what you make
no.
working in fast food.
No,
you can't.
You
can't support your family. You can't live. And you certainly don't want to bring the food home to your kids because it's not that nutritious.
So some of these workers who were at this rally making $7.25, $8.25 an hour. All right. So meanwhile, we're having a minimum wage fight.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going to that figure, of what is sort of targeting that, they're looking at almost double and saying very specifically $15 an hour is what it has to be. Not surprisingly, the major fast food chains will say, okay, well, this will put us out of business.
It's not true.
But don't you just leave room for negotiation by taking
a
goal
go
which
high.
Is higher than...
Right,
yeah.
right. You always do that. But I don't think it's going to put anybody out of business. We see time and time again when there's a higher minimum wage, there's more economic activity, businesses thrive, people spend the money. If you want people to have money, you have to pay them the money if they want to work. And these people do want to work. And so I don't think that this will be the death knell for anybody.
Anybody else in on this?
Well, no, I just think there's something else to be said here. And that is there are other mistakes that have been made by unions. And we have to make sure if... Because I'm all for unions, believe me, I am.
Right, but they have made mistakes.
But they've made mistakes, mm-hmm. And the some of the idiosyncrasies, some of the values of the people at the top have been, and in some cases, the connections to organized crime in the past have been terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to do that again, you're going to find the same reaction. Look, it's all a matter of value. If people think that by belonging to a union, they will get helped as opposed to just shelling out lots of cash, then they'll belong to unions if they can see that they're going to get something from it. What do you think, Ray?
About unions or about this?
No, about
this...
unions and mistakes of the past and about, you know, things.
Well, I want to see where this goes. There were a lot of people who work in fast food and, you know, the SEIU will win big. It'll cost $8 for a Big Mac, but they will win big on this. And so we'll see what happens.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. As we conclude this morning's go-around, we want to just go to a few more letters, and then we'll tackle one or two more subjects, and then off with the rest of the show.
All right. So Tom says, $21 an hour in Denmark, minimum wage. Is Denmark going broke? And Michael says, I can explain President Putin. He is eating too much gluten. Mike in Poughkeepsie. Okay. And then, okay.
Very Seussian moment on the show.
Is that gluten and Putin? Is that why?
Yeah, I think that was okay, that.
And
was
then Kenny G.
Kenny G wrote in?
Oh, wow.
Where's the sex?
Not the same game. Oh, okay.
Nodding off in a
no,
moment.
This guy is into this guy's into representation of, you know, of the church, as a matter of fact. He's a wonderful guy, a friend of ours. And I had mentioned on the media project that it was the part of Harry Rosenfeld was played by Martin Balsam.
Right.
He said, nope, not Martin Balsam. It was Jack Warden who portrayed Harry R. in the movie. I'm sure others have already chimed in with that info this time. No, not really. And then Peter, this is the most important thing. Peter says, when one ages, the gums recede and thus one's teeth appear long.
Ah, okay, all right. I still think that the rodents growing the teeth.
About the rats and all.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay, okay. So, and then Dennis says, no, that's something else. Okay. And no, it's just, you know, I'm trying to do this on the run. It's
no,
not always
that easy.
It was Jack Warden.
Was Jack Warden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was Martin Balsam, too.
Yeah. Well, they look alike.
Yeah. It was a great movie. That's all that really matters.
Okay. We're good?
Yeah.
All right.
Not necessarily.
Okay. I just want to check.
You didn't think it was a great movie?
What?
You didn't think it was a great
movie? I had issues with some parts of it.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah. I love watching it every time it's on.
Yeah.
Why? What issues?
I don't want to get into it.
Okay, fine.
They're personal.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Let's talk.
Hello, and Joe does that. Okay. Yeah. It's both dismissive and, you know, I mean, it's nice.
Well, I just want to move. I don't want to dismiss a good conversation if we're going to get into it.
Yeah.
But if we're not, then we'll
you
move
make
on.
A very good point.
All right. So let's talk about Chris Christie. Will the New Jersey pension battle present a test for him in 2016 is the question that is being asked in the Washington Post. They say New Jersey was shocked by an $807 million budget gap that Christie's administration did not foresee. The governor now says he will have to miss a couple of yearly installments against the state's unfunded pension liability, payments that were part of a law he signed in 2011 and touted as one of his greatest achievements. Wall Street credit agencies have downgraded New Jersey's debt 5 times on his watch, with only California and Illinois rated lower.
Well, this is a very heavy subject if you think about it. I'm sorry. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Boy.
All right. So, but the fact of the matter is here that if you're a Republican and you're trying to win in Republican states, who do your people, you know, in a primary situation, who do your people not like? They don't like public employees. So if your state pension fund misses or gets onto feeble ground and you say, I stood up to these people because it cost too much, you know, you figure that it's politically helpful. It seems that way to me anyway. No, Ray?
No, I think that you could kiss goodbye the problems of the George Washington Bridge. This $807 million budget gap and all these problems over the last several years financially would tend to preclude a presidential.
Well, not so, Ray, because he's out there trying to be president. And we know it. And that includes the George Washington Bridge and this stuff. I think he has a political motivation for doing this.
But does he have a political future?
Possibly.
Beyond
it all depends, Joe, on the quality of the competition. And so far, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I mean, I think we're talking about, Rand Paul and people like that. This is not going to get the Republicans into the White House. Although, there was a very interesting piece in the New York Times this weekend which said that they are now seeing that the Republicans have a 60% chance of taking the Senate.
Oh, God,
so then, think about that.
According to?
I think the Times analysts.
Okay.
Or somebody. I saw it somewhere. 60%.
Well, now, we only have about 4 minutes left in the show, and something has happened where somebody said something in the show, and it has ignited people's interest.
Uh-oh.
So, long in the tooth seems to be getting people all riled
okay.
up. So,
all right.
Alan, I'm going to read this one because it came in on Facebook, and then you can read there's two letters we got, too.
Yeah, sure.
Mike on Facebook says, you guys are killing me. Long in the tooth is a metaphor for old age. It comes from when we depended on horses. Horses develop a long groove in their front adult teeth. The groove grows longer every year, hence the phrase long
okay.
in the tooth.
Well, we knew it was a metaphor for old age.
We actually
knew that
We
part.
Actually have a horse expert who works here, and we'll have to check in with Karen.
Okay.
And she'll tell
All right.
us. Okay. And Kay says, okay, origin. Horses' teeth, unlike humans, continue to grow with age. They also wear down with use, but the changes in the characteristics of the teeth over time make it possible to make a rough estimate of a horse's age by examining
Wow.
them. Okay. And
well, they do that with other animals, too.
Yeah.
And let's see who did this. Doesn't say who.
Marty,
Marty did. Okay, yeah. So thank you, Joe. Long in the tooth implies age. It comes from equine matters. Horse's teeth. Okay, we got that.
Okay.
All right. That's very good. Thank you.
Well, we have,
okay. Kenny G is back again.
Oh, Kenny G?
Yeah, he gives us a picture of both Martin Balsam and Jack Warden. Right. And he says, look alike? Three question marks. One has a receding hairline, the other has a deeply receding hairline.
All right.
Okay.
Life goes on.
Okay, and Michael says, We are McDonald's shareholders, and we believe a person working full-time should be able to earn a living wage. $15 an hour is not enough, says Michael. And Joseph says, under what form of government do you work if you don't have a union? And that is what I got.
All right.
I don't get that.
I'm not sure I do either.
Okay.
Which is why I read them and don't comment on them.
Yeah, okay.
Libby,
point
you were going
to
say?
Well, I just think, getting back to Chris Christie, the misnomer, they're calling this, he's actually calling this the No Pain, No Gain Tour.
Which, he is.
Which I think is not the best thing for him to say.
No.
I don't.
I think he, goes back, as Andrew Cuomo does in terms of when they get elected. They go back to the immense popularity in the beginning, and they say, okay, where did we deviate? Now, Andrew Cuomo is still very popular. Okay.
I get that, but no pain, no gain is associated with people who go and work out and do all that kind
of
stuff.
He's self-deprecating. The best part of
you
humor
think so?
Is always self-deprecating.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I was taken by this article. We just have a minute or two left. I was taken by this article about coconut waters. Did you read this?
Yeah, I read it.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I don't get it. I never thought coconut juice was good for you.
Well, it's
cholesterol-wise.
Like, not the milk. It's the water that I guess just sort of congregates in the center of the coconut, from my understanding.
Yeah. I've got a lovely bunch of them.
A lovely bunch of coconuts. And this was the figure that knocked me out. $400 million, this market of coconut water.
Huh.
And it's sort of the new thing. The celebrities are all drinking coconut water. And when you walk into, places like Trader Joe's or Whole Foods or that there are just
a lot of them.
Tons of it.
There you go. Tons.
All right, so what's the point of the article?
That
they're competing with each other.
Right.
That now, believe that coconut water may be better for us than perhaps even regular water. It keeps us more hydrated.
Wow.
Yeah, and we'll find out soon enough.
Right.
If that's true or not.
Yeah.
Meaning,
you never know with these claims. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Just take coffee, which I'm drinking right now.
Yep.
There are studies that come out show that it's very bad. And then there are studies that come out and say it's okay.
Very good. Right.
Not that it's very good, but it's okay. You know, and then there are some religions that don't have coffee or anything else, and they claim their people live longer.
Huh.
We don't know epidemiologically that.
One thing in this article, a line I liked in this article, so the coconut water went from local to international fame, despite what might seem like a major impediment.
It's taste.
Any flavor. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Somebody said it was like drinking sweaty socks.
There you go.
But what's interesting here is how, the big beverage companies, Coke, they get in. They're
all in on it.
They're all getting in on it, and they're getting in on it earlier and earlier so they can pay less to take over the companies. So
we're going to end there. Okay. Thank you very much. Libby Post, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, thank you.
Thank you, Joe and Libby and Ray. And
thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, we'll be back. And we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org.